Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Joe and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom Appel. Thank you for joining us this week. When you get a chance, check us out at consumerguide.com. You know the drill. Just remember to check us out if you're looking for a new car or truck, you want to see our best buy list, you want to listen to back episodes of the podcast, or the funny stuff I write about classic cars. That's good, too. So check that stuff out. In studio with me live is Jill Simonillo, Managing Editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, North American Car of the Year juror, and very, very picky donut eater.
I noticed you went back to the cinnamon this week for me.
Just a safety play at this point.
My husband dropped me off at the show today, and we were talking about the donuts because we passed Spunky Dunkers on the way here. And I was just like, I was telling Tom that I am a little bit picky, but here's the thing. Like, I'm typically gluten-free, and if I'm going to, like, waste my gluten on something, I want it to be a good something.
Waste my gluten.
Yes.
I've never spoken those words before.
Yeah. I'm just saying. Saying, if I'm going to cheat, I want to cheat on something I actually like.
We'll have to talk someday about what benefits you get from being gluten-free.
My hands don't hurt. That's the benefit I get.
All right. All right. You sent me something interesting that I didn't respond to, but we need to talk about it, and that's pod topping.
Okay. Pod topping.
Apparently, there's a couple of interesting things going on here. Pod topping, Sweden's number one podcast download site.
Uh-huh.
What?
Yes.
What about pod topping?
It has us. They have us on there for people to download.
But you said we were in their RSS feed.
And Oh, yeah. They're RSSing our podcast. So, I'm like, okay.
I did some checking.
Did they translate it into Swedish?
I did some checking about the last episodes of ours. And in fact, we do pop up in Sweden.
Okay.
There is a place we pop up more, which is interesting, and that's Tokyo.
Huh.
So hello.
Hi.
Hello, folks in way different time zones.
Yeah, they're like probably 14 hours ahead of us.
So the funny thing about pod-troppin'.
Okay.
Is that we are listed as a comedy.
Well, I know. Yes.
Yeah. And that's K-O-M-E-D-I, comedy.
Comedy.
So I'm going to recommend that for the future, we come up with two funny, like, morning zoo kind of Swedish comedy names.
Okay.
Right now, I'm going to recommend, you can just think about this, Gustav and Agnes.
Oh, okay.
But we don't have to go that way.
Okay.
Yeah. And to the folks in Tokyo, hello.
What is it? Is it ni hao? Is that hi in Japanese?
I don't know.
I could be completely wrong, and I may have just, like, sworn. I hope I didn't do that.
I'm going to bet you anything. Like, a couple of the people in Tokyo, we may know.
Right.
Yeah.
There could be a couple people there we know.
A lot of car stuff there.
Yes.
So there you go. Weird stuff. Weirder stuff. Maybe not weird. We're getting used to it, but it's horrible. Another massive Ford recall.
Oh, my gosh.
This one, 850,000 units. It's largely the big trucks for the low-pressure fuel pump. For people who don't know, you use a low-pressure fuel pump in the fuel tank to get fuel to the engine, and then a high-pressure fuel pump for the injectors. But this will be an expensive recall because the fuel tanks have to come out.
Yeah. I wrote an article about a month ago about Ford being the most recalled automaker. Full stop. Like, by a lot. And they have so many more recalls already this year than any other automaker.
And they're profoundly expensive.
Yeah.
And this 850,000 units, this is going to cost them $1,500, $2,000 for a vehicle to fix. That's a chunk of change.
Well, and so what's really interesting about this is I recently went on a plant tour at the Kentucky truck plant. KTP for short. And it was really interesting because they said that they were focusing a lot more on quality, and they had an iPhone hooked up to like a camera, like at the line, pointing at the line. And as a vehicle would come through, it would kind of pause and the camera would like record video, take pictures, whatever, and feed it through AI to check for quality issues. And I mean, it was for a specific thing. It wasn't for the entire vehicle, but I'm like, how's that working?
But yes, you would think that given everything that they've done to improve quality, quality would improve, and it hasn't. But the quality doesn't seem to be with assembly. It seems to be with parts.
Yeah, so it's more
pump,
of a supplier
They don't
issue.
Build the fuel pump. It comes from a supplier. So interesting thing about that. There was a recent update to a study that, conducted by Plant Moran.
Okay.
Industry consultancy. Plant Moran every year does a survey of supplier relationships with manufacturers, and it ranks them.
Mm-hmm.
So top of the list are the manufacturers, the OEMs, with the best relationships with their suppliers. The bottom of the list, not so good. Guess who's on the bottom of the list? Very bottom.
Just spitballing, but I'm kind of guessing maybe Ford.
Ford and Stellantis, yeah.
Yeah.
On the bottom of that list. And just for fun, guess who's on the top of that list?
I would say like Toyota or Hyundai.
Toyota.
Yeah.
Toyota has the best relationship with its suppliers, and clearly that translates into better stuff.
Yeah.
Clearly. So, and part of that might be like building stuff too much, like moving suppliers, updating stuff too much during its run, you know, because there should be continuous improvement, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have a part, it should run for 3, 4, 5 years and not change too much.
Right.
And that's good for quality. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I don't know that that's what's going on here, but it seems to be what's going on here. And if you listen to industry analysts talk about the situation, this is what they point to.
Yeah.
So, man, 4 million units this year they've recalled. And we're halfway through the year.
That's nuts.
That's more than they've sold.
Yeah.
So every single vehicle is coming back. And they're spending $2,000 or so to fix them.
Well, I mean, keeping in mind that some of these recalls are not for 2025 models.
They no, that's
are
true.
For older vehicles.
That's true.
So, I mean, it's not like every 2025 model that has been recalled.
No, but there are duplicate recalls. So
it's all
quite
fair,
ugly.
Fair.
And speaking of ugly, and I didn't see this coming, and I don't know the whole story, Volvo.
Mm-hmm.
Volvo laying off 15% of its U.S. workforce.
Yeah.
We know people who were laid off,
we
actually.
We do.
But mostly white-collar workers at their New Jersey headquarters. They're blaming a profit slump. That's in quotes. Profit slump. Sales are actually up for Volvo in the U.S. this year.
Well, so I think the problem there is that they're getting hit with tariffs. You know, the EX30 that was supposed to come out like 2 years ago, is just now starting to hit the United States, but it's not the cheap EV that it was supposed to be because originally it was built in China. And so I think that their vehicles are getting hit with tariffs. And even though they're selling a lot, I don't think they're making as much per vehicle as they thought they would.
No one is.
Yeah.
Everyone's taking a profit hit here. You just drove the Polestar 4.
I did.
That's embargoed?
It is.
But where is it built?
So the ones that are coming to the United States are going to be built in South Korea.
In South Korea?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm 99%. They're not going to be built in China is the end of that story, but I think it's South Korea.
They are entering a weird partnership with Renault, I believe, to build vehicles in South Korea.
Yeah.
And that gets the production out of China.
Yeah.
They had planned to build a bunch of this stuff in China.
Uh-huh.
And that's not going to happen now.
No. And I did ask while I was there. So my driving impressions are embargoed, but I think the facts that we have are not embargoed because I think the pricing information is already out on the website. But I did ask them. I said, so you have these prices right now. Are the tariffs baked into the current price, or do you see price increases coming? And the exec I talked to is like, well, the tariffs are baked into the price for the tariffs that we know of now.
Yeah.
And he's like, so when this
We don't
actually,
know what we don't know.
We don't know what we don't know. But so the vehicle is slated to come out in October. And he said, you know, if things change by October, the prices will go up.
Interesting. The other interesting thing here, too, is that it's like 10 years ago, maybe, but Volvo started that factory, opened that factory in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a small factory,
mm-hmm.
like 125,000 units a year kind of factory. Mm-hmm. I bet they're wishing it was bigger now.
Yeah, because I think the Polestar 3 is being built there.
That sounds right.
And then, yeah, but
Do I understand this right? Is the Polestar 2 being discontinued already?
That I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I don't.
It's a
don't
nifty looking little car.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've driven all three of them, the 2, 3, and 4. And the interesting thing about the strategy that they're employing is the 2, 3, 4 doesn't apply to size or anything other than.
No,
just order of vehicle being produced.
Very confusing.
So, like, they had a Polestar 1, and that was the first car it put out. The Polestar 2 was the second car it put out. Then 3, 4, you know, so you get the idea.
Well, even weirder, the Polestar 1 wasn't electric.
Yeah.
This is an electric car company.
Yeah.
But their first vehicle
it's
was
electric now.
Well, no, the Polestar 1 was. Yeah, the company is now, but they launched being electric. I mean, that was their plan.
Yeah.
And their first vehicle was a plug-in hybrid. Weird.
Yeah, well, it was electrified, but the Polestar 4 will be slotted between the 2 and the 3. So the 2 is like a sedan, the 3 is more SUV-like, and the 4 is, I'm not sure.
Wait, start this again.
2 is a car.
Yeah.
3 is an
like,
SUV.
Like a four-door hatchback.
Yeah, 3 is an SUV. The 4...
Which is like a compact SUV.
Yeah, the 4 fits between the 2 and the 3, and they don't know what they're calling it.
That's not a lot of space.
And it's they're calling it an SUV coupe, and I'm like, so does it fall in the SUV category or the coupe lineup? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense to me. Car or SUV? And they're like, yes.
Hmm.
So,
and then the Polestar 4 also controversial because it has no rear glass.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Okay. And I can't talk about how I feel about that, but I will say, without having driven it, it was a little bit of a mind mess because you look and you expect to be able to see out the back and you cannot.
Right. So you're trusting
the digital camera mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, I mean, okay. It was, yes.
Can you talk about this next week?
No, I can't talk about it until October.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, so they embargoed us until October. But, you know, the vehicle itself has some really cool features, from the rear camera mirror to the infotainment system to some fixes that they made. So I did a video a couple months ago about how annoyed I was with the Polestar 3 and the fact that all of the mirror adjustments are done through the infotainment screen, like the mirror and the steering wheel. It's all done through the
infotainment screen. Well, that was my shock and surprise driving the Navigator, the new Navigator.
But it's on the thumb wheel.
Yeah.
So they actually created a shortcut on the thumb wheel now, so you don't have to go through the screen to do those adjustments.
All right.
So, but yes, lots of interesting things.
It's a good looking car. Yeah, we'll talk about that when you can talk about that.
Yes.
And then when you talk to the guys at Polestar, do they disassociate themselves from Volvo, or do they make it clear that they're partners? Is it more Toyota Lexus, or is it more Kia Hyundai?
I would say it's kind of, that's a tough question. I didn't ask that.
Okay.
But from my perspective, I would say it's more Kia Hyundai than Toyota Lexus.
So they're just different businesses in the
U.S. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Because like Toyota Lexus, they have the same PR people.
Yeah.
They never flinch about talking about the vehicles being on the same architecture.
Yeah, and Polestar has different PR people.
Yeah,
and
right.
So, yeah.
And that's, you have in between that, you have like Audi Volkswagen, where they're friends.
Yes.
They don't deny it.
And I don't think that the Polestar Volvo people are frenemies or anything. Like, I feel like Kia and Hyundai are kind of frenemies.
A little bit. Yeah. All right. We have big news coming. We'll talk about it later, but there's a new Mazda CX-5 on the way.
Yes.
This is Mazda's bread and butter vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
The new CX-50, which isn't that new anymore, didn't do much to chop into CX-5 sales. It seems the CX-5 very much embodies what Mazda means to be, which is sporty, relatively roomy, fun to drive, very well crafted. It's just a good vehicle. So there's a new one coming. There's going to be a hybrid.
Yes.
So that'll be cool. We don't know that much about it yet. Well, we do. There's pictures of it out there.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that when it happens. But that's a big deal.
Yes.
Big deal in the market. Now you, what did you drive?
The Subaru WRX TS.
This frustrates me for one reason.
Okay.
Because I drove the TR, it seems like 9 months ago,
right,
and that's already been killed and replaced by the TS.
Yes.
So we should talk about what the WRX is, because it's sort of the last bastion of affordable, sporty sedan-ishness.
It is. So four-door sedan. It doesn't have the boy racer spoiler, but that's what it's missing. Otherwise,
it's
it would
not
be a boy
missing
racer.
That.
No, it's not. But
spoilers are silly. Unless you're going 160 miles an hour, spoilers are silly.
That's true. But other than that, it would totally be a boy racer car because it has electric blue interior accents. It's the TS, which is the top offering from the WRX lineup, is manual transmission only. They have Recaro seats standard, and it is a fun vehicle to drive.
So this is what's super interesting about that vehicle. There's a base model called Premium.
Mm-hmm.
Not a good name for a base model, but whatever. Premium, then there's a Limited, and those are the more accessible two models. But then it gets sportier, but it gets weird. There's the GT, which is automatic only.
Mm-hmm.
and the TS, which is manual only, and they are tuned differently. And the GT really is a GT in the old school grand touring tradition in that it's not quite as hard edged.
Mm-hmm.
But they're the same price.
Yeah.
The GT and the TS. So they're a little expensive, $48,875. It's a bunch of money for a small sedan. They're based on the Impreza.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, a bunch of rewarding to drive.
Yeah, and I mean, it includes like all the up-level features, the large infotainment screen, the wireless Apple CarPlay, the digital display with analog-looking gauges. It has, when you put a destination into your Apple CarPlay, it kind of feeds it into
the you skip
screen.
You skip the good bits. The Brembo brakes.
Brembo brakes.
Yeah, the adjustable
engine.
Dampers, the wheels and tires.
Yes.
So.
I thought all that was covered in the fun to drive aspect. The one thing I will say, my husband is about 200 pounds. He's 5'8", and he sat in the passenger seat, and he was like, this is too small for me. So, and he's not that big of a guy, and the Recaro seats felt a little bit tight for him.
They will make you want a kidney replacement after time.
or you'll just have to pee. I don't know. One of the two.
I don't think I had the had to pee thing happen.
Okay.
I just had the ouch, my sides hurt thing.
Okay. No, they fit me perfectly, but again, 5 feet tall, 95 pounds.
Yeah, it's funny how manufacturers sort of select a driver size and then run with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I doubt your husband would enjoy a Miata for very long.
It's been a while since I've had one, so I don't know.
Yeah, we haven't seen a Miata in a very long time in the fleet.
Mm-mm.
It's still sort of the benchmark sports car.
Yeah.
Like, if you needed the definition of a sports car,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, Miata.
Yeah.
But the WRX kind of gets the same thing done, but you get four doors.
Yeah, and the back seat is actually kind of roomy. You could put average-sized adults back there without squishing them. There's a good amount of headroom, decent knee room. They actually have USB-C and USB-A charge ports back there. The suede inserts and the sportiness of the seats like filter into the back seat as well,
which is nice.
Yeah,
hilarious story about that. And this was true of the Dodge Neon going way back when. There was a generation of the Ram pickup truck going back to maybe the last thing called Dodge.
Okay.
But they had the really good looking front area.
So this is 2011 ish.
Maybe before.
Okay.
Maybe before that, but. The Ram was already getting this reputation for building the really sweet-looking interiors,
mm-hmm.
but it was all up front.
Okay, yeah.
In the back, it looked like the front interior, but it was all crap.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of automakers did that, though.
Yeah.
And I remember driving a Subaru at one point, and our Subaru PR person, Dominic, he was like, spend some time in the back seat and touch the materials. Because he was like, we've used the same materials
we actually
in the back
spent
seat.
The money to do
yeah.
that. You know what the funniest thing about the Dodge Neon and I think it was still a Plymouth Neon at the time, was that you could get power front windows.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't get power rear windows.
Yeah.
It was so weird.
Let's just close in the back people anyway. It doesn't matter.
But sometimes if you're up front, you want to open the rear windows.
That's fair. That's fair.
So, I mean, that was a cheap car, but whatever.
Yeah, that was the Dodge Neon was the car that I actually learned how to drive a manual transmission on.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. There was two engines in that. There was a 2-valve and a 4-valve, and the 4-valve, I think, was 132 horsepower or something. But it was an early 16-valve engine with some gusto.
Okay.
So that vehicle could be fun to drive. Back to the WRX-TS. I don't know why I let you just drift off of topic. What would the competition for this be?
Golly. That's a good question, because there isn't anything that's really super sporty in the sedan. I'm like, the Corolla isn't sporty, but it's similarly sized. You could say GR Corolla, but that's a hatchback.
And I don't know, pretty extreme.
Yeah.
I actually think that's less livable than this.
Oh, no, that's the car I would want, is the GR Corolla.
But the seats would kill me. I enjoyed that vehicle very much, and the three-cylinder sounds ridiculous. It's a great-sounding engine. So I think Golf R and maybe Golf GTI kind of bracket this.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they still have like a Jetta GLI with the manual transmission, sporty-ish.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably a little bit slower and a little bit more refined than this.
The GLI or the GTI and the Golf R don't have a manual transmission anymore.
Nope.
The GR Corolla does.
I hate to say this, they don't need it.
Well, like the automatics in those needs a manual transmission.
The automatics in those cars work so well.
Well, but the point of it is you work the car, not the car working you.
Is that the point?
Yes.
I don't know if that's the point.
No, that's kind of the point.
Again, I've driven a few hundred thousand miles stick. I've got it out of my system.
It's not out of my system yet.
It's not necessary anymore.
It's necessary.
Like a black and white TV.
Yeah. Well, you know, so I just, we talk about this offline, but I just listened to an episode of We Are Motor Driven where they talk about the stick shift and bringing back the stick.
Yeah, it's never coming back. It's never, ever coming back. It doesn't even make sense anymore. Real quick, though, how is the shifter in this?
It's good. It's really good. You know, sporty clutch, so kind of stiff. But I thought the shifter itself was pretty smooth and easy to find the gears.
Little notch to it, right?
Yeah.
Little bit.
Yeah.
But that's okay. It's fun.
Yeah. And I didn't feel like I was hunting for gears. And it wasn't super, like, a super close ratio for the shifting
short
either.
Throw.
So it was easy to...
I've never driven a car with this, but there's a short throw package that you can throw on the Miata, and the Miata already has like a really short throw shifter.
Right,
it's like just finger movements. Yeah,
yeah.
And there's a short throw kit for that. I'd love to drive that because that's crazy. Now, just for comparison's sake, my buddy Tony bought a 1973 Volkswagen Type 2, which was the van, the microbus. The shift lever on that was like 2 yards long. It's just ridiculous. The distance from the floor to the top of the shifter was ridiculous, and it bent. So you could never really tell what gear you were in, but it was a 3-speed manual, and there was no power, so it didn't really matter what gear you were in. You never stalled it out, and you never went fast, but that's the opposite of short throw.
Okay.
My Jeep CJ7, also pretty long throw.
Right.
But really precise.
Okay.
That was a good shifter. All right. Summary, WRXTS, that baby gets to 50 grand in a hurry. Is it worth it?
I think it's worth it if you are the kind of person who likes a manual transmission, wants something sporty, but also occasionally needs to put somebody in the backseat. And it has some of the latest technology. It has, I'm going to say, a decent backup camera, but not a great backup camera. And it's just a very tight car.
My brother-in-law, who once owned a BMW 2002, so he's that kind of car guy, doesn't drive much anymore, but has, this is what he drives. He drives a WRX. I don't know what model year.
Right.
But it's that kind of car. Like, when you want to drive, it's a fun thing to drive.
Yes.
All right, we should take a break. When we come back, we talk to Jennifer Stockberger, Director of Operations at Consumer Reports Auto Test Center, about the best cars for teens.
Awesome.
All right, we'll be right back.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
We Are Motor Driven is like your favorite garage conversation, just with mics. Honest car talk, wild opinions, and no gatekeeping. New episodes weekly, wherever you get your podcasts. Bring snacks and buckle up.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She's Jill, and we're popular in Sweden.
We are very popular in Sweden.
I don't know that we're very popular in Sweden.
I'm going to say very popular.
But we're a comedy duo
in
Sweden, so that's nice.
Well, my mom thinks we're funny, so therefore, we are funny.
Speaking of comedy, you're on social media.
But you want to talk about your social media.
No. Oh, this is my... I don't care.
Okay, fine. Yes, I'm on social media.
Yeah, you go.
I go. You can find me on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, all at Jill Simonello, my full name kind of mushed together. And then I use the hashtag Car du Jour. So if you don't know how to spell Simonello, which why would you? Just look for Car du Jour.
And if you're looking for pictures of Jill wincing at donuts.
Yeah, you can just go on Facebook for that. That's an easy one.
We'll talk about today's donuts later. Okay. On the phone with us is Jennifer Stockberger. She's the Director of Operations at Consumer Reports at the Consumer Reports Auto Tech Center. Jennifer, how are you?
I am well. How are you this afternoon?
I'm good. Jill, are you good?
I think I'm good.
Usually I speak for Jill, but I didn't want to step out.
I appreciate you.
Jennifer, you guys, well, tell us a little bit about Consumer Reports first, and then we'll talk about the best cars for teens.
Sure. So Consumer Reports has been testing cars as far back as its inception in 1936.
Wow.
So we are pushing about 40 to 60 new cars through our test program every year at our auto test center in Colchester, Connecticut. So we're doing a comprehensive evaluation. About 50 individual tests go into a car's road test score.
Wow.
But then we also leverage our very robust member survey for reliability and owner satisfaction, as well as some safety bonus points for a vehicle's overall score.
How many members is that? I know it's a big number.
Yeah, it's about 5 million. So it's a combination of people who, believe it or not, still read magazines.
God bless them.
Who are magazine subscribers and our online subscribers as well at consumerreports.org, which is slightly larger and a bit more up-to-date, if you will, than the magazine.
5 million. It's wonderful that you guys maintain that credibility with the audience. That's awesome. Now, you guys put together a list
and
recently.
The best.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
You guys put together a list of the best new cars for teens. What makes a car best for a teen?
Right. So this is a list we do, both new and used, actually, for vehicles that mainly focus on safety. And we collaborate closely with the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, the IIHS, because what we bring to the table, Consumer Reports, is the kind of performance aspects that influence safety, braking, handling, controls, believe it or not, and combine that with their data on those that provide the best crash protection.
That's very interesting. Now, when you consider a car for teens, do you take price, cost of insurance into account?
So we don't. These are just the first step in identifying those vehicles that will keep your kids safe. And again, we look at the stats. A young driver, 16, 17 years old, is like four times more likely than even a driver that's over 20 to be in a crash. So we're trying to leverage those cars that will, one, keep them out of a crash if we can, but in the event that they are, because they are four times more likely, that they will protect them. So it's this really careful balance.
So part of the suite of content that you guys put together around this topic is the benefits of buying a new car. Why is a new car better for a teen than a used car?
Yeah, so we always say, whether you're buying new or used, buy as much safety as you can afford.
Okay.
So when you're talking new versus used, new kind of leverages that a bit more in two ways. One, it's most likely got the latest and greatest in crash avoidance features,
sure. Okay.
Like automatic emergency braking, like, you know, pedestrian detection, as well as the newest cars will also be subject to the most recent and up-to-date crash test that the IIHS performs. So they're continuing to iterate over time and make their crash test a little bit more difficult, a little more challenging. So the newest cars are the ones that do that the best. As long as they're on this list, they are considered top safety picks or top safety pick pluses by the IIHS. So the newer you can afford, the better in any case, either new or used.
So you mentioned automatic emergency braking and pedestrian detection as two of the features that are important in terms of safety. As you're looking at safe cars, like, what are some of the other features that parents should be looking at that they should make sure their cars are including?
Yeah, so one of the things, and this goes back a little bit more, and every vehicle on our used list includes it, probably the biggest, which you guys will totally understand, is electronic stability control.
Okay.
So certainly that became standard in 2012, but it was on some of the vehicles prior to that mandated year of 2012. So if you're looking at used, if you look at nothing else, make sure that that is on the vehicle you're choosing.
That's a great
other
point.
Newer features that certainly we find among our drivers and are most appreciated, particularly as young drivers gain experience, are things like blind spot warning and rear cross traffic warning. As they're gaining judgment, as they're gaining experience, those telltales that one can say, hey, don't merge yet because there's a car in your blind zone, or even parking lot maneuvers where rear cross traffic warning comes in, super helpful to an inexperienced driver.
I've noticed you're not very worried about sound systems. That seems...
Or Apple CarPlay, right?
Well, it's very interesting, you guys, how technology sometimes takes away, or even legislation. Like, just for example, we didn't used to have cars that were really big. We had no three-row SUVs on the list. We had no minivans on the list. It's now graduated licensing in nearly all states eases that concern a bit, because they can't legally have what we used to call the party car. They can't have that anymore. So now you see those vehicles, which also now have electronic stability control, so it eases their handling, on the list. And you are so right, Jill. It used to be that teen use of their phones was such a huge concern. Mm-hmm. Now, when you can integrate, like you say, through CarPlay or Android Auto, it kind of eases that safety burden as well. Again, going back to the newer you can get and have those kind of integration aids is super helpful.
Speaking of new, Jennifer, can you walk us through a few of the vehicles on your best cars for teens?
Yeah, so these are new cars. We can talk both new and used, but new cars, they're probably not surprising to people, and they range from about $25,000 to closer to the average, around $42,000.
Okay.
But things like a Honda Civic, for example, or a Mazda 3, those are the most reasonably priced vehicles that are on there. When you get a little bigger, and again, we now include vehicles that are a little larger, you're probably not surprised to see things like the Subaru Forester, for example. We say that's the greatest car for anyone from 16 to 85. It's the Subaru Forester.
I drove one to the studio today.
And what'd you think? It just suits.
Yeah, no, I'm driving the 2025 or 2026 hybrid, but it's a delight.
So
yeah,
you have hybrid. Yeah. And then you'll see, like I say, bigger Honda Pilot, Kia Telluride, which years ago might not have been on the list, but are there now.
So when we're talking about something like a Telluride, you would not buy a Telluride for your kid. But if you were considering a car for the family, that might be something that your kid will drive often. That's a great way to go.
Yeah, but you know, the truth is, you might consider a Telluride for your kid now. Now that electronic stability control is there. Now that automatic emergency braking is there. Because from our side, from the Consumer Reports side, we are looking at cars that have a minimum level of braking distances, handling performance. And when we've now gotten to these unibody SUVs, they kind of handle like a car. They just have a lot of space.
So you have
I'm
sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, Jennifer. You guys have a component of your list that is recommendations by budget, and there's an under $10,000 class. How much car can you get for less than $10,000 these days?
Yeah, so this is in the used market, and they're kind of divided. In the used categories, there's two levels, what we consider the best, and these are vehicles that meet the criteria for the IHS and CR, but also have standard automatic emergency braking and headlight performance. Mm. So there's that level.
Okay.
And when you're looking at that, there's vehicles like the Toyota Corolla, $9,500. Sorry, I'm losing my voice a little. A sub $10,000, still a great car. We also have, recognizing that a lot of people are not spending that much money, good choices. And those go down as low as $4,400.
Wow.
Because when you're talking something like a Nissan Sentra, mm-hmm. when you're talking about the criteria, it goes back to model year 2015 or newer. Mm. So you are getting in that good list some sub $5,000 vehicles. And we've really tried in the crazy market to make the list more broad so that people have more choices. And then, of course, we say to people, you absolutely want to look at reliability. You absolutely want to look at what your insurance costs will be on these as well.
So when I think Consumer Reports, I think reliability generally, in the broader sense of Consumer Reports. When you guys are looking at affordable cars for youngsters, especially cars under 10 grand or under 5 grand, are you still looking at reliability as well?
So we used to leverage reliability into these best cars for young drivers list. Like I say, in that effort to give families, young drivers, more choices, we pulled that out this year. Mm. So this list of this year is purely safety related.
Okay.
And you'll see the benefits to that are more model years and are, again, a broader list, more model years, lower prices, and the expectation that this list won't change now. We'll now be looking at 26 of adding on 25 and 26 models. But in the past, because reliability changes over time, the model years were shifting year over year. Mm. Absolutely, and this is going to sound like an ad for Consumer Reports. Once you narrow down the vehicle, we totally encourage people to go to consumerreports.org and look at the individual model year you're considering, or if you have a car that you have in mind that's for sale, and look at those reliability years, because it can be one up, one down. Of course, there's more reliable brands like Toyotas and Subarus, but even they can have an off year.
So say somebody has narrowed it down to like a Mazda 3 versus a Honda Civic, are going to go to Consumer Reports and they're trying to decide if they should get a subscription. What kinds of things will they see if they get a subscription that they won't be able to see if they don't have one?
So, again, this is a pretty narrow criteria based on safety. Couple things that getting the subscription and being able to look at what we call the full road test for that car is one. The rest of the story, which ones are most quiet, which ones have the most comfortable seats, you know, things like that that are more convenience and comfort based versus safety based. Okay. You'll get that information. Certainly the reliability, a huge one that we talked about. And owner satisfaction, what others who own that car think of that car, and then what all of the available safety features are. So we, as I mentioned earlier, did point for things like having automatic emergency braking as standard equipment. In many vehicles, that automatic emergency braking, particularly in our good list, they might be available only on certain trims.
That makes sense, yep.
So it'll sort out whether your, you know, ES trim has it and maybe, or you have to pay for it optional, and maybe your limited trim or a higher trim is standard equipment. So you'll get some of that information as well.
So Jennifer, any tips for parents of kids who might be a little cranky and a little picky about their used car? I asked because roughly a decade ago, we took my daughter used car shopping, and we had to buy her a car because we were not going to wake up to drive her to swim practice. So she didn't want to drive. She had to drive. And even though she didn't want to drive, she was strangely picky about the cars. And what kind of advice do you have for parents who have kids that are maybe picky? And I'll ultimately... You don't have to get what the kid wants at all, right? You're paying for it. But still, you do want to keep some harmony in the family.
You do. And you know what? The glory, I think, of this list, I'm literally looking at them as we're talking. There are very few cars on here that are so uncool that they're going to balk at owning them. You know, again, there's some minivans here, but you don't have to get those. In fact, they're some of the more pricey ones if you look at the list. But there are some great cars. And I think of things like the Subaru Crosstrek, which is what my young driver drives, for example.
Yeah, good one.
A Volkswagen Tiguan, a Mazda 6. These are kind of cool cars.
Six is a nice car.
They're meeting all of the safety criteria. So I just think the list is so broad that it certainly helps that battle. And it's such a hard thing, as you're saying, to send them out there. You know, you think of, it's very few places where we have to share our just faith in humankind that they're going to be good drivers out there with us. So it's really hard to say, okay, kids, go.
I looked at, I'm not finding it now, but I looked at the list earlier and I saw the Mazda CX-30 on the list, and that's a spectacularly nice and cool car. That might be a favorite.
And that's in the new list. Again, that's in the new list. It hasn't quite made it below our $20,000 price point because it's new enough for the used list, but you know, even the other advice is if you have 12, 13-year-old kids, this is a great list for a new car for a family that might be the car that next driver.
Ah. Oh, yeah.
Planning ahead, playing a little chess there, aren't you?
Planning ahead,
Jennifer, we're out of time, but remind us, how can we check out this list and everything you guys do at Consumer Reports?
Yes, so because it's safety related, these are free lists at consumerreports.org. You're looking for the best cars for teen drivers, both new and used. So take a look, and then as Jill said, certainly narrow down your choice and then go check out the rest of the information, the reliability, the safety features, the comfort features at consumerreports.org.
Jennifer, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
All right, that was Jennifer Steigberger with Consumer Reports. We're going to take a break, and when we come back...
Quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
I'm Robert Colangelo, host of The Green Sense Show. Every week, we feature groundbreaking innovations from energy and agriculture to smart cities and sustainable transportation. We interview experts working to create a cleaner, greener future. One of my favorite segments is Green Automotive News with auto expert Tom Appel. We test drive and review the latest EVs, hybrids, and ultra-efficient cars. Visit greensenseshow.com or listen to The Green Sense Minute on 105.9 WBBM Chicago.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Bobo and she's Lutefisk.
I thought I was Agnes.
I'm just trying out different names.
Oh, got it. Okay.
For our, because our Swedish comedy duo.
Sweden like us.
I did do things in reverse order today. So I am Car Guy Tom.
Yes.
On Twitter X and Blue Sky.
Yes.
And if you want to follow the other stuff I do, I'm on Facebook.
Yes.
Well, last Wednesday, I joined Nick DiGilio for a screening of Dazed and Confused.
Okay.
The movie from 1976. The cars in that movie are awesome. And that's why I was there. I talked a little bit about, after the movie, he does a little.
About the cars. Got it.
So I talked a little bit. So thank you, Nick, for having me. That was a bunch of fun. So we're all Swedish today, right?
Da.
Yeah. Did you say da?
Da. Ja. I don't know.
I don't either.
Ni hao.
Actually, no.
I don't know.
Today's quiz topic is, this will make you very happy, Saab.
Oh, because it's Swedish.
It's Swedish. Five questions here, plus a bonus question. You just need to get three for a win.
Okay.
We're talking about the legendary car maker Saab. I have owned a Saab.
I have not owned a Saab.
Shortly after we got married, my wife and I bought a 1991 9000 CD. It wasn't automatic, it was not a turbo, but it was one of the nicest cars we ever owned.
Okay.
Big sedan. You know, nice seats for four, beautiful interior. Everything about that car, it rode and handled so well. A little slow. 30 miles on the highway, 30 miles per gallon. It was just a fantastic car. Beautiful green. It looked like $1 million.
Okay.
And then the engine shattered. Yeah. Timing chain broke. It was an interference engine. Pistons hit valves.
Okay.
And then we find out that the previous owner had purchased an extended warranty. Saints be praised.
Yes.
Because that was going to be pricey.
Yes.
But anyway.
Okay.
Saab. It was fantastic. Are you ready?
Okay. And Saab, S-A-A-B, not to be confused with Saab, S-O-B.
I just assumed everyone knew that.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
I guess if you're really young, you have no idea what Saab is.
Yeah. Yeah.
That there used to be Swedish car companies that weren't owned by Chinese companies.
That's correct. They were owned by American companies.
All right. We have some time to go. We can go casual on this one.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah, you're not going to like hurry me along and say we need an answer?
I will anyway. Because dead air is not
fun.
Impatient. No, dead air.
But we got great music.
We do have great music.
Yeah.
I go back and forth on whether or not it would be funny to listen to this music in the car. Just crank it up.
Well, that is your music type.
No. No. It's really not.
It kind of is.
No.
Yeah.
No. In what year was Saab founded? Are you ready?
Okay.
11 BC, 1945, or 1978?
Hmm. Now, do you mean Saab the car company?
Actually, it's just Saab the Saab.
Saab the Saab?
Yes, because they are also a defense contractor. They're also a truck builder. And frankly, I don't really know what happened
Born
in 1945.
Airplanes.
Yes. Yes. They still build a plane.
Yeah.
The Gripen? I think it's called the Gripen.
I don't think it was in the BC.
Okay.
I'm just going to put that out there.
They might have been like, a lot of these Japanese car companies used to build like looms and bicycles. So you don't know.
Well, I think Mazda was initially a cork company. Like they made cork.
Really? Yeah. I bet you it was good cork.
I'm sure it was really good cork.
11 BC, 1945 or 1978?
So. I'll say 1978.
No, it was 1945.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, lots of cars before 1978. You have no points.
I have no points. Your favorite phrase.
It is.
Yeah.
And Jill.
Yeah.
In what Swedish city was Saab headquartered?
Okay.
Are your my phone's going off.
Is it spam likely?
It is.
Okay.
There we go. In what Swedish city was Saab headquartered?
Okay.
Trollhättan, Stockholm, or Bedford Park?
I'm going to say it's not Bedford Park. I think it was Trollhättan.
It is.
Okay.
You have 1 point. Trollhättan. By the way, little umlauts over the A.
Okay.
In Trollhättan.
Okay.
So that looks cool. That looks authentic.
All right.
I think Bobo, my new radio name, I'm going to put umlauts over both O's.
But doesn't that change how it sounds?
It's probably like
Berber,
Bow Bow
or something?
Berber or something.
Okay. Okay.
Jill.
Yeah.
Question three. What technical idiosyncrasy were early Saabs known for? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Two-cycle engines, carbon fiber architecture, or inflatable bumpers?
Inflatable bumpers are a thing. I'm just going to put that out there.
Well, put it on the list of possible.
But the fact that you're a little bit surprised means that you don't know that inflatable bumpers are a thing.
Actually, I have a story.
Okay.
And it involves Volvo, not Saab.
Okay. So I'm going to say that's not the thing, but what were the first two again?
Two-cycle engines, carbon fiber architecture, or inflatable bumpers.
Clearly, I'm not privy to the early Saab years. Since I said 1978 instead of 1945. But I'll say two-cycle engine.
Yes. Yes, the two-cycle engine, which they wrapped up in 1968 because they're filthy. They're an emissions disaster.
Okay.
Two-cycle engines basically fire once every rotation of the engine, not once every two rotations.
Two.
And it's a real complicated setup, but basically you have to vent air in through the crankcase, which means everything's really dirty.
Got it.
Additionally, because of the travel, not enough lubrication is getting to the piston, so you have to add oil to the gas.
Okay.
Like an old lawnmower. So two-cycle, it had its day in the light. It was very efficient, energy efficient, but loud, buzzy, dirty, not good.
Okay.
Yeah, they discontinued those in 1968.
Okay.
Inflatable bumpers. I believe there was a Volvo safety vehicle, a concept car from the early 70s that had inflatable bumpers.
Well, and there was a...
Also, there's actually air... That's different from airbag bumpers.
Yes.
Which is a thing that...
Yes.
...is under consideration.
Yes.
To raise the price of cars.
Well, you know.
Oh, you got that one, right?
Yeah, I did.
All right, you've got two.
Yes.
All right. In what year did General Motors acquire Saab? 11 BC, 1990, or 2001? I didn't write the answer down.
Do you know the answer?
I do.
Okay.
I wouldn't have known it exactly, but...
I'm gonna say... It's going to be 1990 or 2001. But, like, 2001 was...
Let me ask it differently. In what year did General Motors ruin Saab?
2001.
But I still need an answer to the acquisition.
Right. I'm trying... Because, like, that's right around the time that I first started writing about cars. So, I just don't have the institutional knowledge.
See, dead air.
I know. With music. I'm just enjoying the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
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 90. Okay.
Yeah. They took it over and immediately started putting Saabs on their own architecture.
Okay.
Which didn't go great.
Yeah. Do you remember the Saabaroo?
Well, there were two. The Saabaroo was the Saab 9-2X.
Mm-hmm.
Which was basically an Impreza.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually a WRX because it was all-wheel drive and turbocharger. Pretty cool. It's a good-looking car.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was also... Actually, I can't mention it because it's coming up.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, TBD.
It's the next question.
Okay.
Oh, so, wait, you got that one wrong.
No, I got it right.
You guessed 1990?
Yeah.
All right, then you won. All right, a little bookkeeping here. You've won. Okay.
Yes.
Last question.
Okay.
On what vehicle was the Saab 97X based? The Chevrolet Corvette, the Chevrolet Malibu, or the Chevrolet Trailblazer?
Trailblazer.
Yeah, that
it was an SUV. I'm like, that much I know.
I have a lot of stories about that vehicle because I went to the press launch for it.
The 97?
Yeah, the 97X. And that press event, they must have changed the parameters of what they were trying to do with it.
Okay.
Like days before, because the schedule was hyper-compressed. Hmm. Like you landed up in, I think it was Quebec, and they were like rushing you. Go to a car, go to a car, go to a car. And the cars were literally lined up outside the airport, and we took off, and no one even handed me a route guide.
So, just arrive at the location.
It was a crazy trip. So the thing about the 97, first of all, the Chevy Trailblazer was actually a decent vehicle. It was a big body on frame. Mm-hmm. 4x4 midsize pickup, or I'm sorry, crossover SUV. And that's what the Saab became. And Saab needed a crossover, yes.
Yeah.
It didn't need a big body on frame truck.
No.
But that said, what they did to it was pretty good.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't a Saab. Also, at one point at a rest stop, I was just sitting in the car waiting for my drive partner to come back from using the boys' room. Mm-hmm. And I'm running my finger along the headliner, right? And the headliner's kind of crappy, kind of low buck. And one of the guys from the event looks in the window, sees me do it, and he goes, "It wasn't in the budget."
Oh, God.
But there was that was the first Saab V8.
Okay.
Because you could get a 5.3 liter V8 in it.
Okay.
All right. So you've already won. You don't need the bonus question, but we're going to do it.
All right.
In honor of our friends in Sweden.
Okay.
Founded in 1968, Max Burgers has become one of Sweden's most beloved culinary institutions. Today, Max Burgers has 155 locations across the country.
Okay.
Jill. Mm-hmm. By the way, Max Burgers was also the name of the prosecuting attorney on Perry Mason.
Okay, I'm just going to nod and smile at that.
Actually, it was Hamilton Burger. I just thought that was funny, and I actually wrote it down.
Okay.
All right. Which of the following?
Because we are a comedy show.
That's right. That's right. Jill has become Lutfisk.
Yes.
I'm Bobo. Which of the following, Bobo asks Lutfisk, which of the following is not on the Max Burgers menu? Are you ready?
I am ready.
The Fish Deluxe Buffalo Sandwich, the Green Kale Caesar Salad, the... hot honey seafood hoagie, or the chevreux bites?
Chevreux?
Chevreux. I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly. That is goat cheese.
Oh. Okay.
Chevreux.
So.
You can look.
Goat cheese bites, because you know the answer.
Well, I made it up, so yeah.
But just because you made it up doesn't mean you know the answer. I'm just going to put that out there. I think it's chevre.
All right.
Maybe. I don't know. C-H-E-R-E.
I actually went to a pronunciation, and it sounded like Chevrolet with the lay dropped off.
Okay.
Chevre. Okay, whatever. It's cheese.
Yeah. I want the green kale salad. I hope that's real.
I hope so, too, for your sake.
I go to Sweden so often.
So we'll just read the list again.
Yeah.
The Fish Deluxe Buffalo Sandwich, the Green Kale Caesar Salad, the Hot Honey Seafood Hoagie, or the Chevreux Thing Bites.
I'm going to go with the first one.
This fake?
Yeah.
The Fish Deluxe Buffalo Sandwich?
Yes.
It's real.
That is weird.
It does sound weird. Yeah, it does sound weird. The Green Kale Caesar Salad is real.
Yay!
The Hot Honey Seafood Hoagie is fake. And the Chevreux bites, which look delightful in the picture, they're real.
Okay.
All right. Next week.
Yes.
We talk to the good folks at Chrysler.
We do.
We're talking to who?
Chris Fuel.
Yeah. Chrysler. Yep. Chrysler CEO.
Chrysler and.
Alfa Romeo.
Yes, I was like, I was blanking on the name, but yes, Alfa Romeo.
So, 100th anniversary of Chrysler, so we'll be digging into that. Chrysler's got a bunch of innovation, so that'll be fun to talk about.
Yes.
So, and then I just spoke today with our friend at Collectible Automobile Magazine.
Okay.
Don Sikora, who would like to join us again sometime. So, I'm trying to get him in studio.
Okay.
So he can do the quiz.
Okay.
Because writing a quiz for you and Don would be big fun for me.
Yeah, and not for me, because he will get everything and I will get nothing, because I'm sure you'll make a classic car quiz.
No, I don't think so. Don's very up to date.
He is.
And he was a new car editor for a lot of time before he took over CA. So
yeah, that is true.
My hat's off to Don. My hat's also off to John Beal, his predecessor at Collectible Automobile Magazine.
Yes.
All right, what's coming up? What's going on? What are you driving right now?
I get the Cadillac IQ. Coming up.
Or the Cadillac Ick, as the kids call it.
The Cadillac Ick. So what's really funny is I posted a TikTok about my experience with the vehicle, the Cadillac Optic, and how I was having problems with the infotainment system. And I actually had some people give me some advice on ways that maybe I can make a non-Apple CarPlay system work for me. So I am going to...
We got through the whole show
I just... I really want to make this work. I want to make it not suck, and I want to learn how. I'm really trying.
Well, good for you.
I'm trying. So I downloaded a new podcast app. And someone actually told me on TikTok that there is a way, like a dongle or something that you can buy to put Apple CarPlay.
This is a kid-friendly show.
A dongle.
I have a hard time with the word frunk and dongle.
Dongle.
Yeah, they trouble me, both words.
But there is a dongle, they said, that you can buy that will put Apple CarPlay on the vehicle. And I haven't found it yet, but I'm looking.
Do you know that I lost my dongle in the frunk?
Well, that was a very large frunk then.
I was just going through pictures of the F-150 Lightning, particularly the Flash
Speaking
edition.
Of large frunks.
That's a huge frunk.
That is a very
No, that's
frunk.
Where I was going with that. That's a huge frunk. That's a useful...
You could lose a dongle in that frunk.
Yeah, and then you can also use that as a cooler, which actually seems like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
To pop the hood, and instead of an engine, you have, you know, Pabst Light.
Beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Spotted Cow.
Spotted Cow would be better.
All right, good show, I think.
Yes.
Thank you very much. What was I going to say about today? I don't know. So thank you to our friends in Sweden, I guess.
Yes, thank you. And Tokyo.
I got to go through that list. It's interesting. It's by city, and it doesn't gather them by nation, so you have to go through. It's very weird. Like, you're not going to be surprised by this, but like a dozen people in Palatine, Illinois listened last week.
Okay. They're probably all related to you.
Well, one of them is me. One of them is my mom. We know one of them is not my wife.
Or your daughter.
Yeah. All right. That's a show.
That is a show.
Thank you to Jennifer. You see that? That's hard to read all compressed together. That's a typo.
Yeah, well done.
Thank you to Jennifer Stockberger of Consumer Reports. Thank you, Jill. Thank you to producer Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. And special thanks to the good people of Sweden.
Yes.
Let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.